17. When Rockmel Ben Applebaum made out the dim, shadowy shapes of the UN pursuit ships as they approached to escort the Omphalos, he knew that, whatever else was a cover, at least this much was true. The UN had traced him, had him, and no doubt Doskar as well. So, he clicked on the microwave transmitter and raised, after an interval, the UN pursuit ship's local commanding officer. "I'll believe you," Rockmel said, "when I hear Al Doskar say it. And when I look him over," he said to himself, for signs of a cephalic wash. But why would they say it if it wasn't true? They had him. He and the Omphalos, detected, were now booty captured by the armed intersystem vessels of the great UN structure that spanned from planet to planet. Why make up a cover when there was no force to influence, no force able to provide any resistance? "God above," he thought, "if it's true, then we can rely on Horst Berthold. We let our prejudices blind us. Von Einem is German and Horst Berthold is German, but that does not any more prove they are working together, are secret collaborators, than, say, any two Ubangis or any two Jews. Adolf Hitler was not even a German, so our own thinking," he realized, "has betrayed us. But maybe now we can believe this. We can see. New Whole Germany has produced Dr. Sepp von Einem and Trails of Hoffman Limited, but it may also have produced something else when it created Horst Berthold." "We will see," Rockmel said to himself. "We'll wait until we are in New York at UN headquarters, face Horst Berthold, and see the evidence of the assertion given by relayed macro radio signal. The assertion that as of 6 a.m. New York time this morning, UN troops had entered all retail outlets of Trails of Hoffman Limited, had seized the Telpor instruments, had, throughout Terra, arbitrarily and without warning of any kind, halted emigration to Whale's Mouth." 12 hours later, Rockmel was led by a worried, overworked female secretary into the UN Secretary General's office. "The fanatic," Horst Berthold said, surveying him, "the idealist who sparked the hankering in Matzen-Glaser holiday that caused him to attempt his coup d'etat at Whale's Mouth." He turned to an aide. "Bring in the Telpor apparat." Seconds later, the familiar bipolar mechanism was noisily carted into the UN leader's office, along with a thoroughly unnerved-looking technician. Minus his goggles, he looked frightened and small. To the Telpor technician, Horst Berthold said, "Does this operate to permit teleportation two ways, or only one? Zwei oder ein, Antwörter."
"Just outward, mein Herr Sekretär General," the technician quavered. "As Theorem 1 demonstrates, the recession of matter toward—"
Horst Berthold said to his aide, "Bring in our WASH psychiatrists. Have them start with their EEG machines." At that, the Telpor technician said, in a voice that broke with dismayed intimidation,
"Does Brocken see nicht?"
"He's saying," Berthold said to Rockmel, "that he will cooperate. We don't need to employ our psychiatrists with him. So, ask him." He jerked his head fiercely toward the cowering THL employee. This man in his white smock who had assisted in the emigration of literally millions of innocent human beings. "Ask him whether the Telpors work both ways." The technician said, virtually inaudibly,
"Beide, both ways."
"There never was any Theorem 1, Berthold snapped.
"Sie haben recht,"
the technician agreed, nodding. "Bring in Doskar," Berthold said to his overworked female secretary. When Doskar appeared, he said to Rockmel at once, "Frey is still alive over there." He indicated the Telpor instrument. "We've been in contact through this, but—" He hesitated. Horst Berthold said,
"Matzen-Glaser Holiday is dead. They murdered him immediately, but nearly half of Lies Incorporated's field personnel remain alive at various installations at new colonized land, and we're beginning to supply them on a strategic basis, with weapons of types which they instantly need, and presently we will, at tactical spots, try commando teams. We can do a lot, I think, with our commando teams."
"What can I do?" Rockmel said. He felt overwhelming impotence. It was going on, had been going on, without him, while he journeyed, pointlessly, through tween utterly empty space.
This, the UN Secretary General seemed to read on his face.
You awakened Mattson, he pointed out, which caused Mattson to attempt his aborted coup.
And the relayed message from Freya home to Dasker and then to the Omphalos informed us of the reality hidden under Theodoric Ferry's cover, a cover which we carry the moral stigma for accepting all these 15 years. Everything based on the one fundamental hoax that teleportation could be achieved in only one direction. He grimaced. However, Trails of Hoffman Limited made an error as great as their cover when they did not impede your 2,000 Lies Incorporated veterans from crossing over. To Dasker, he said, but even so, that would not have been enough. However, with our tactical support...
It wasn't enough even at the start, Dasker said, since they took out Mattson right away.
Half to himself, half to Rockmel, he said.
We never had a chance. Probably Mattson never knew. He probably didn't even live that long. Anyhow, maybe you can retrieve Freya. You want to?
Instantly, Rockmel said, yes. To Horst Berthold, he said, can I get equipment out of you? Defensive screens, if not offensive hardware? And I'll go alone. They would not, in the confusion, notice him, perhaps. Whale's Mouth had become a battlefield, and too many participants were involved. One lone man was a cipher, a moat. He would enter inconspicuously, and if he found her at all, it would be that way, as an entity too trifling to be considered by the vast warring entities. Within the context of the power struggle which had already truncated Lies Incorporated, one contender had been abolished at the start, and now only the two monoliths existed in the field to slug it out. THL on one hand, the UN as its wise old antagonist, its roots of victory deep in the last century. The UN, he reflected, had a head start, that of 50 years. But Trails of Hoffman Limited had the inventive genius of half-senile but still crafty old Dr. Sepp von Einem, and the inventor of the Telpor instrument might not have ceased with that construct. He wondered if Horst Berthold had considered this. It didn't matter, because if von Einem had produced something else of equal or of merely significant value, it would show up now. In the streets of new colonized land, whatever Dr. Sepp von Einem and THL had over the years developed would be at this moment in full use, because this was, for all participants, the dies irae, the day of wrath. Now they were, like beasts in the field, being tried. And God help, Rockmel thought, the contender who is found wanting. Because out of this only one participant would live. There would be extended to the loser no partial, no half life. Not in this arena. He himself, he had only one task as he saw it. That of getting Freya home out of Whale's Mouth and back safely to Terra. The 18-year journey, the odyssey aboard the Omphalos, learning Attic Greek so that he could read the Baki in the original. That childlike fantasy had withered at the press of the iron glove of the reality situation, the struggle going on, not 18 years from now, but at this instant, at the Whale's Mouth terminals of 6,000 Telpor stations.
Seinherz voll Haskeladen?
Horst Berthold said to Rockmel.
You speak Yiddish, you understand?
I speak a little Yiddish, Rockmel said, but that's German. His heart heavy with hate.
What's that from?
From the Civil War in Spain, Berthold said. From a song of the International Brigade. Germans, mostly, who had left the Third Reich to fight in Spain against Franco in the 1930s. They were, I suppose, communists. But they were fighting fascism, and very early. And they were Germans. So they were always good Germans. What that man, Hans Beimler, hated was Nazism and fascism in all its stages and states and manifestations.
After a pause, he said,
We fought the Nazis too, we good Germans. Vergess uns nie.
Forget us never, Berthold had said, quietly, calmly, because we did not merely join the fight late in the 1950s or 60s, but from the start. The first human beings to fight to the death, to kill and be killed by the Nazis were Germans.
And Terra, Berthold said to Rockmel, ought not to forget that.
as I hope they will not forget who at this moment is taking out Dr. Sepp von Einem and creatures allied with him. Theodoric Ferry, his boss, who, by the way, is an American. He smiled at Rockmel. But there are good Americans, despite the A-bomb dropped on those Japanese women and children and elderly. Rockmel was silent. He could not answer this. All right, Bertold said then. We will put you together with a WEP-X, a weapon expert, to see what gear you should have. And then, good luck. I hope you bring back Miss Holm. He smiled, fleetingly, and turned at once to other matters. A minor UN official plucked at Rockmel's sleeve.
I'm to take charge of your problem, he explained. I'll be handling it from now on. Tell me, Mr. Ben Applebaum, precisely what contemporary, and I do not mean last month's or last year's, weapons of war you are accustomed to operating, if any, and how recently you have been exposed to the neurological and bacterial...
I've had absolutely no military training, Rockmel said, or anti-neuro or back modulation.
We can still assist you,
the minor UN official said.
There is certain equipment requiring no prior experience. However,
he made a mark on the sheet attached to his clipboard,
this does make a difference. 80% of the hardware available would be useless to you.
He smiled encouragingly.
We must not let it get us down, Mr. Ben Applebaum.
I won't, Rockmel said grimly. So I'll be teleported to Whale's Mouth after all.
Yes, within a matter of an hour.
The unteleported man, Rockmel murmured, will be teleported. Instead of enduring the 18 years aboard the Omphalos. Ironic.
Are you capable morally, the UN official inquired, of employing a nerve gas, or would you prefer...
Anything, Rockmel said, that'll bring back Freya. Anything except the phosphorus weapons, the jellied petroleum products, I won't use any of those, and also the bone marrow destroyers, leave those out. But lead slugs, the old-fashioned muzzle-expelled shells, I'll accept them, as well as the laser beam artifacts. He wondered what variety of weapon had gotten Matson Glazer Holiday, the most professional of men in this area.
We have something new, the UN official said, consulting his clipboard. And according to the Defense Department people, very promising. It's a time-warping construct that sets up a field which coagulates the...
Just equip me, Rockmel said. And get me over there, to her.
Right away,
the UN official promised, and led him rapidly down a side hall to a high-speed descent ramp to the UN Advanced Weapons Archives. At the retail outlet of Trails of Hoffman Limited, Jack and Ruth McElhattan and their two children emerged from a Flapple taxi. A robot-like organism carted their luggage, all seven overstuffed, seedy, borrowed for the most part, suitcases, as they entered the modern small building, which for them was to be the last stopping point on Terra. Going up to the counter, Jack McElhattan searched about for a clerk to wait on them.
Geez, he thought, just when you decide to make the big move, they decide to step out for a coffee break.
A smartly uniformed armed UN soldier, with an armband identifying him as a member of the crack UAR division, approached him.
What did you wish?
Jack McElhattan said.
Hell, we came here to emigrate. I've got the post creds.
He reached for his wallet.
Where are the forms to fill out? And then I know we've got to take shots and...
The UN soldier politely said,
Sir, have you watched your infomedia during the last 48 hours?
We've been packing, Ruth McElhattan spoke up. Why? What is it? Has something happened?
And then, through an open rear door, Jack McElhattan saw it, the Telpor. And his heart bent with mingled dread and anticipation. What an admirably large move this was, this true migration. Seeing the twin wall-like polar surfaces of the Telpor was to see the frontier itself. In his mind, he recalled the years of TV scenes, of grasslands, of miles of green lush.
Sir,
the UN soldier said,
read this notice.
He pointed to a square white with words so dark, so unglamorous, that Jack McElhattan, even without reading them, felt the glow, the wonder of what for him was a long-held inner vision, depart.
Oh, good Lord,
Ruth said. From beside him as she read the notice.
The UN, it's closed down all the Telpor agencies. Emigration has been suspended. She glanced in dismay at her husband. Check. It's now illegal for us to emigrate, it says.
The UN soldier said,
Later on, madam. Immigration will resume when the situation is resolved.
He turned away then to halt a second couple who, with four children, had entered the trails of Hoffman office. Through the still open rear door, Mikkel Hatton saw, to his dumb disbelief, four work-garbed laborers. They were busily, sweatily, efficiently torch-cutting into sections of the Telpor equipment. He then forced himself to read the notice. After he had read it, the UN soldier tapped him, not unkindly, on the shoulder, pointed out a nearby TV set, which, turned on, was being watched by the second couple and their four children.
These are new colonized land,
the UN soldier said.
You see?
His English was not too good, but he was attempting to explain. He wanted the McElhattans to understand why. Approaching the TV set, Jack McElhattan saw gray, barracks-like structures with tiny slotted windows like raptor eyes. And high fences. He stared uncomprehendingly. And yet underneath, comprehending completely, he did not even have to listen to the odd track, to the UN announcer.
Ruth whispered, My God, it's a concentration camp.
A puff of smoke and the top floors of the gray cement building disappeared. Dwarfed, dark shapes scampered, and rapid-fire weapons clattered in the background of the announcer's British-type voice. The calm, reasonable commentary explained what did not need to be explained. At least, not after this sight.
Is that, Ruth said to her husband, how we would have lived over there?
Presently, he said to her and their two children, Come on, let's go home. He signaled the robot organism to pick their luggage up once more.
But, Ruth protested, couldn't the UN have helped us? They have all those welfare agencies.
Jack McElhattan said, The UN is protecting us now, and not with welfare agencies. He indicated the work-garbed laborers busy dismantling the Telpor unit.
But so late.
Not, he said, too late. He signaled the robot thing to carry their seven bulging suitcases back outside onto the sidewalk, avoiding the many passing people, the dense, always dense, sidewalk traffic. He searched for a Flapple taxi to take himself and his family home again to their miserable, cramped, hated Connaught. A man, distributing leaflets, approached him, held out a broad sheet. McElhattan reflexively accepted it. The Friends of a United People outfit, he saw. Glaring banner. UN verifies colony tyranny. He said aloud, They were right. The cranks, the lunatics, like that guy who wanted to make the 18-year trip by interstellar ship. He carefully folded the broadsheet, put it into his pocket to read later. Right now, he felt too numbed. I hope, he said aloud, that my boss will take me back.
They're fighting, Ruth said. You could see on the TV screen. They showed UN soldiers and then others in funny uniforms I never saw before in all my...
You think, Jack McElhattan asked his wife, You could sit in the taxi with the kids while I find a bar and get one good stiff drink.
She said, Yes, I could.
Now a Flapple taxi was swooping down, attracted. It headed for the curb, and the four of them, and their mound of fat luggage enticing its tropism.
Because, Jack McElhattan said, I can use, for instance, a bourbon and water, a double. And then, he said to himself, I'm heading for UN recruiting headquarters and volunteer.
He did not know for what, not yet, but they would tell him. His help was needed, he felt it in his blood. A war had to be won, and then, years from now, but not 18 as it had been for that nut written up in the papes, they could do it, could emigrate. But before that, the fighting, the winning of Whale's Mouth all over again, actually, for the first time. But even before that, the two drinks. As soon as the luggage was loaded, he got with his family into the Flapple taxi and gave it the name of the bar where he often stopped after work. Obligingly, the taxi spouted up into the overcrowded, me-first, nose-to-nose density of supra-surface Terran unending traffic. And as the taxi rose, Jack McElhattan dreamed again of tall, wind-touched grasses and frog-like creatures, and open plains meandered over by quaint animals that were not afraid because no one intended to hurt them.
but his awareness of the reality remained and ran parallel to the dream. He saw both at once, and he put his arm around his wife and hugged her and was silent. The taxi, expertly maneuvering among all the other vehicles, directed itself toward the bar on the east side of town. It knew its way too. It also knew its task. Philip K. Dick was born in Chicago in 1928 and lived most of his life in California. He briefly attended the University of California, but dropped out before completing any classes. In 1952, he began writing professionally and proceeded to write 36 novels and 5 short story collections. He won the Hugo Award for Best Novel in 1962 for The Man in the High Castle and the John W. Campbell Memorial Award for Best Novel of the Year in 1974 for Flow My Tears, The Policeman Said. Philip K. Dick died on March 2, 1982 in Santa Ana, California, of heart failure following a stroke.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Lies, Inc. by Philip K. Dick. Copyright 1964 by Ziff Davis Publishing Company. Additional material copyright 1983-1984 by the estate of Philip K. Dick. Performed by Luke Daniels. Directed by Michael Naramore. Performance copyright 2011 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, Post Office Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.